This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Back in 1964, President Lyndon Johnson declared war on poverty, so we've had 50 years to tackle the problem, but the challenge for millions of American families remains as intractable as it ever was. We got a reminder of that here in Massachusetts just today. A new report from the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center finds that the poverty rate in this state is at its highest level since the 1960s, back when that war on poverty was first launched. And the gap between the richest and the poorest, it's wider in this state than in the nation as a whole. Noah Berger is executive director of the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center, and he's with us now in the studio. Noah, thanks for coming in.
It's great to be here.
So according to your report, the official poverty rate is 12%. Tell us what that means. Define what we mean by poverty in this case.
Yeah, poverty is a number that was selected by the federal government back in the 1960s to try to measure, you know, a level of basic subsistence amount of money that you'd need. It's actually a fairly crude measure, and the Census Department has since then come up with more accurate measures that look more carefully at what the true cost of making ends meet is and recognizes that that can be different in different regions of the country. And it's called the Supplemental Poverty Measure, and that actually tells us an even more interesting story than the regular poverty measure, because one of the things that that tells us is that if you just look at so. Two different ways it corrects. A, it sets a more realistic level of what it costs to make ends meet. And B, it looks at more different kinds of income that people have. So it includes, you know, SNAP, which are food stamps, and earned income tax credits and other things. And what you see when you look at that is while our regular poverty rate is 12%, using that other rate, if you were to set that more realistic notion of what it costs to make ends meet and just look at cash income, we'd have about 27% of a poverty rate in Massachusetts.
So is that saying the folks that basically it's $19,000 a year for a family of four, that would be poverty, but are you describing the near poverty rate?
Yeah, so now this is a rate that the census looked at that actually looks at actual costs, like costs of health care, costs of transportation to get to work, costs of food. It comes out at 27%, but the census also did a second step, which is to say, well, let's look at what happens when you count the other benefits that people get, like earned income tax credits, like SNAP, and you see that then the poverty rate comes back down to 14%. So we see that, in fact, those public programs, which have not brought our poverty rate down to where we want it to be, have cut the poverty rate close to in half from what it would otherwise be. So a lot of those Great Society programs that you talked about in the war on poverty, they're working. They're keeping poverty below what it should be, or what it would be, certainly not to the levels as low as it should be. The problem is that we're fighting an upstream battle because there are two sets of issues to look at when you think about poverty. One is the specific programs that attack poverty. The other is what's happening in our overall economy. And what's happened in the overall economy since the mid-1970s has made it very hard to fight poverty. And what that is that wages have been stagnant.
Right. In fact, there's some statistics in here. In the report, you note that between 1979 and 2012, productivity in Massachusetts nearly doubled, but the median income increased by just 18%, right? And so obviously that's going to have a bigger impact on the people at the bottom of the income ladder.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It used to be in the years after World War II into the 50s and 60s and early 70s, the way our economy worked is that as we became more productive, as we produced more goods and services per hour of work, wages went up. If the economy grew 2.5%, wages went up 2.5% across the board for low-wage workers, middle-wage workers, and high-wage workers. And there were reasons for that. We had laws and institutions that made that possible and made that what happened. Basically, you know, if a company had a good year, labor and management would sit around the table and say, we made enough this year to raise profits by 3% and raise wages by 3%. Let's do that. That sounds fair. And that's generally what happened. Today, when you have that same conversation, it's basically, you know, management and stockholders saying, how can we maximize profits and hold down labor costs? And holding down labor costs means holding down wages. And that's more or less what's been happening the past several decades. As the economy's grown, it's gone into higher profits, higher incomes for the highest income people in salaries to CEOs, but really hasn't led to higher wages for low-income people and middle-income people.
So there's a really good summary of this, and I'm just going to read this. This came out of the Boston Globe, just summarizing your report, this part of your report. If wages across all income levels had grown equally, workers in the bottom 80% would be earning around $10,000 more a year, while the 1% would be earning almost $1 million less.
Yeah, that's right. And the incomes overall have grown about 55% since the late 1970s. And if everybody's wages had grown 55%, low-income people and middle-income people would be making a lot more. High-income people would still be doing pretty well. They'd be making over the highest income 1% would still be making over $600,000 a year. But instead, they're making well over $1 million a year. Mm. Wages at the top have gone up, or incomes at the top have gone up about 270%, while, you know, overall, it's gone up 55%, and at the bottom, they've been stagnant.
So you made the point that without public assistance programs like food stamps, health insurance for the poor, early education, Head Start, Medicare, earned income tax credits, all of that, things would be a lot worse. So speaking of programs like these, I want to ask you about this, and this comes out of the recent campaign for governor. Charlie Baker, the governor-elect, has talked about welfare reform. He wants to get more people off of public assistance and into real work. That sounds like a good idea, but given what you're describing, how would you advise him to go about this? I mean, what should he avoid so as not to weaken that safety net?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think we know what it takes to help people get off welfare and into work, and there are three or four major things. One is education and job training. We have to make sure that people have the skills they need to have good jobs. Two is childcare. It's very hard if you're a low-income working parent to stay in the labor force if there's nobody to take care of your children. And we've, you know, cut access over the past 15 years to affordable childcare. Affordable transportation. People have to be able to get to jobs. And we need decent jobs in the economy. And that's one place where there has been some progress this year. As you probably know, the state this year raised the minimum wage. Back in 1968, a full-time minimum wage worker earned about $21,000 a year. Mm. Today, a full-time minimum wage worker earns $16,000 a year. We're a much wealthier country. We're paying our lowest wage workers $5,000 a year less, once you adjust for inflation, than in 1968. Thanks to a big grassroots coalition of low-income people and organizations that led the fight to raise the minimum wage, and the legislature supporting that effort, the minimum wage in Massachusetts is going to go up from $8 to $11. That's a little bit more than a 10% raise for working people this year. It's happening over 3 years, another 10% the next year, another 10% the next year. It's not going to bring the minimum wage to where it should be, but that's enormous progress. And that's the sign that people are beginning to focus on this issue, is of how do we reward work and help working people. Secondly, in the same year, the state enacted through the ballot a sick time law, so that it used to be, or it is today in Massachusetts, for about 1 million workers, they don't have paid sick time. Many of those don't get sick time at all. So if you're too sick to work and you're a low wage worker, your employer can say, sorry, if you don't come to work, you're fired. Mm. And that's not something people should face. And again, because a lot of grassroots organizations and unions and low-income people organized to try to change that, we had a question on the ballot. And the voters of Massachusetts overwhelmingly said, yes, we should make sure that our low-wage workers have access to earned paid sick time.
But given that the poverty rate is as high today as it was back in the 1960s when Lyndon Johnson launched the war on poverty, does that say to you we're basically at a standstill when it comes to improving the lives of people at the bottom?
So during the first decade of the war on poverty, we made enormous progress. That was a time when we still had an economy that was raising wages across the board, mm-hmm. and we had the Great Society programs. And in that period, child poverty, for example, in the nation went from 27% to 15%. Since the mid-70s, when the economy has stopped generating broadly shared prosperity, stopped generating wage growth for low and middle-income people, it's been an uphill fight. And most of the public programs have basically kept us from having the situation get worse and worse for low-income people. And to make real progress, you eventually need to do both. We need to provide the investments in young people, in their education, in their skills, and supports like childcare for working people directly. But we also need to make sure that our economy is working in a way where when the economy grows, wages grow right along with the economy.
Well, big challenge there. That's Noah Berger, Executive Director of the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center. You can find more about their report released by his organization today at radioboston.org. And Noah Berger, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.